Hello, this is Jamie Peterson with the Herald and Review for Wednesday, March 18th, 2020. We start with our headline, Coronavirus, the Local Impact, Virus Turns Deadly in State, by Jonathan Lamar and Kevin Freaking from Associated Press. A Chicago woman in her 60s became the first person to die in Illinois after contracting the coronavirus, the governor announced Tuesday, as the state went ahead with its presidential primary and schools were closed to reduce the spread of the disease. The Trump administration also increased calls to stay home nationwide amid the pandemic. In Macon County, no one had tested positive for the disease as of noon Tuesday. The Macon County Health Department said two tests had been authorized by the Illinois Department of Public Health. One result came back negative and one was pending. Healthcare providers also could have had testing done at private labs, said Marissa Hosier, Director of Health Promotion and Public Relations for the County Health Department. The department has requested that healthcare providers send notification of submitted tests, but that is not required at this time, so there may be more tests currently underway, Hosier said. By making shared sacrifices, we can protect the health of our people and our economy, and I think our economy will come back very rapidly, Trump said. If we do this right, our country and the world, frankly, but our country can be rolling again very quickly. As the global markets fluctuated amid fears of a recession, the president conferred with tourism executives as well as restaurant leaders, retailers, and suppliers. His administration was expected to propose a roughly $850 billion emergency economic stimulus to address the freefall, including considering the sending of checks to American workers trying to make their way in the deeply unsettled economy. U.S. businesses, large and small, were reeling from shutdowns, cancellations, and public fear about the virus as the number of cases rose nationwide. Stocks moved higher on Wall Street on Tuesday, a day after plunging to their worst losses in more than three decades. Macon County organizations continued to cancel events and enact other restrictions. The Decatur Park District announced it would close the Decatur Indoor Sports Center and cancel its day camp, which officials previously said would take up to 75 children in three smaller groups to help working families who needed child care while school is out. The health department is posting daily updates on Facebook and sending daily updates to the press to keep the public as informed as possible, Hosier said. The county's crisis communications team of local government and healthcare leaders has said it will send updates around noon each day when needed. Illinois has had 160 confirmed cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, according to the State Department of Public Health. Among them are 18 residents of a nursing home outside of Chicago and four of its staffers. All of those infected have been isolated, officials said. The location of the facility wasn't disclosed. 55 new cases of COVID-19 were announced. The patients, at least four of them, whom have recovered and are no longer in isolation, have ranged in age from 9 to 91. Residents in nursing homes are our most vulnerable population, and we are doing everything we can to protect them, said State Health Director Dr. Gozi Izik. We may see cases in other long-term facilities, which is why it is so important that we all do our part to reduce possible exposure in the community to those who go in and out of these facilities as they provide care to residents. Governor J.B. Pritzker, in a press conference, said the Chicago victim had an underlying health condition and had extended contact with another infected person, and that she wasn't a nursing home resident. Illinois' first reported death came a day after Pritzker announced that he was mandating the cancellation of all gatherings of 50 people or more, and the same day schools statewide and dine-in service at restaurants and bars shut down for at least 2 weeks in an effort to halt the spread of the respiratory virus. The state has also severely restricted visitor access to long-term care facilities and instituted pre-shift screening for workers. Coronavirus infections across the country reached approximately 5,200, and the death toll climbed to at least 97, with more than half of the dead from Washington state. Worldwide, more than 7,300 people have died. For most people, the coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough. But for some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia. the vast majority of people recover from the virus. The federal government on Tuesday began debate of the stimulus package, which could include checks written to all Americans at the urging of Trump. Another federal bill to provide paid sick leave to workers, among other provisions, awaits action in the U.S. Senate. Nearly 2 weeks ago, Congress approved and Trump signed an $8.3 billion supplemental coronavirus response funding bill, which will provide $14.6 million to the state's public health department and $8.7 million to Chicago's. The money can be used for patient monitoring, lab testing, acquisition of test kits and protective equipment, and research into vaccines and therapeutics. Pritzker has urged stronger action from the federal government while also taking COVID-19 response steps at the state level. He noted Tuesday the administration will file for statewide eligibility in a federal loan program for small businesses facing financial hardship. My Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity has secured the necessary documentation to declare a statewide economic injury declaration with the U.S. Small Business Association, Pritzker said. The SBA is offering coronavirus disaster assistance loans to help impacted companies get through this period of instability, and this will ensure that all of our counties qualify for assistance. Eligible small business or nonprofits could receive up to $2 million that can be used to pay debts, payroll, and other bills they can't otherwise afford due to the pandemic. The interest rate is 3.75% for businesses and 2.75% for nonprofits, and terms can be as long as 30 years, according to the governor's office. But during his briefing a day earlier, Pritzker noted that providing state tax relief to bars and restaurants, which are closed for dining in but otherwise open for delivery or carry out, for at least the next 2 weeks, is a balancing act in terms of state government and local business needs. We want to be good to our small business people, there's no doubt about it, and I care deeply about making sure that entrepreneurs are successful, he said at a Monday news conference. And the balance that we're trying to make is that delays in tax payments, for example, could be an enormous hit to the state of Illinois. And so we're trying to work with the federal government to get a little bit of help in providing that relief. The Illinois Chamber of Commerce is backing the governor in calls for greater federal action. The state can only do so much. The federal government needs to do more, Illinois Chamber President Tom Mache said in a phone call Tuesday. If you have symptoms, symptoms can include fever, cough, and shortness of breath. If you have symptoms, do not go to the emergency room. Instead, first call your primary care physician. If you do not have a primary care physician, call Crossing Healthcare at 217-877-9117 or SIU at 217-872-3800. Patients and visitors to healthcare facilities should prepare to be screened before entering. Also on the front page, Biden claims Illinois moves closer to November battle with Trump. By Sarah Burnett, Associated Press. Former Vice President Joe Biden won the Illinois Democratic primary for president on Tuesday, widening his lead over rival Bernie Sanders in an election complicated by the coronavirus pandemic. Biden, who Sanders led in delegates, needed to win the nomination, also won in Florida, which, along with Arizona, held its primary Tuesday. Ohio delayed in-person voting until June amid the COVID-19 outbreak. The win in Illinois was in a state that propelled the career of Barack Obama to the White House, where Biden was vice president. Both served in the U.S. Senate. On Tuesday, President Donald Trump also secured enough delegates to officially become the Republican Party's presumptive nominee for president. Also on the Illinois ballot were primaries for a congressional office, including a rematch between Democratic Representative Dan Lipinski and Progressive Marie Newman for a Chicago area seat previously held by Lipinski's father. There were also primary races for state legislature, Cook County state's attorney, and judicial contests, including for seats on the Supreme Court. The virus caused problems in Illinois, including polling places that didn't open and lower than usual voter turnout in some areas after state officials declined to postpone the election. Governor J.B. Pritzker ordered schools, restaurants, and bars closed due to the virus, but said we have to elect leaders even in less than ideal circumstances. There was some confusion as election authorities around Illinois scrambled to find alternate polling place locations because nursing homes and some other typical sites backed out due to concerns about the coronavirus. Biden, who represented Delaware in the Senate, had support from Illinois' Democratic leaders, including endorsements from Pritzker and other statewide office holders, most of the congressional delegation, and both U.S. senators. Paul Grabarczyk, a 57-year-old retired electrical engineer, said he voted for Biden because of his work as vice president. He cracked that he would vote for a cheese sandwich over President Donald Trump. "I have faith in both Biden and Bernie," he said outside a Burbank polling place. "They would both be fine choices, but Biden earned my trust as vice president. He's got a proven track record." Officials encouraged people last week to vote by mail and extended hours at early voting sites, hoping to avoid crowding at polling sites on Election Day, and voters seemed to heed the advice. Statewide, there were 504,000 early votes cast and 294,000 mail ballots sent to voters as of Monday, the Illinois State Board of Elections reported. That's up from 400,000 early votes and 160,000 mail ballots as of the day before the 2016 primary. Chicago had surpassed previous records for early voting as of Sunday. The coronavirus causes only mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough, for most people, though it can cause more severe illness for some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems. The vast majority of people recover from the virus. Officials with all 108 of Illinois' local election offices were well aware of the polling place precautions suggested by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the state's Department of Public Health, said Matt Dietrich, a spokesman for the Illinois State Board of Elections. "They're all doing their best to put those into practice," he said Tuesday morning. The pandemic changed the way candidates campaigned in the days leading up to the election, and most candidates canceled election night parties or were holding small gatherings they planned to live stream. On Monday night, Sanders held a virtual rally to encourage supporters in states voting Tuesday, while Biden held telephone town halls. Sanders, a Vermont senator and Democratic socialist, lost Illinois in 2016 by less than 2 percentage points to Hillary Clinton. Rolla Othman, a 46-year-old university technology director from the Chicago suburb of Burbank, said she voted for Sanders, but will vote for the Democratic nominee in November, no matter who it is. "We have to get the other guy out," she said, refusing to say Trump's name. Also in election news, "Not a Normal Election," by Garrett Karsten. Coronavirus fears limit judges' turnout. Out of Decatur. Coronavirus fears loomed over Tuesday's primary election, with some voters showing up in masks and the scent of hand sanitizer lingering in the air. Turnout is often lower in primary elections than general elections, but election officials said worries about the spread of COVID-19 may have kept some people at home or led to more early voting and mail-in ballots. "I'm sure it's the virus," said Tia Pete, an election judge at Central Christian Church in Decatur, "because we've had a few people come in that want to use their own pens, so I think there's concern with that." The polling place had recorded 196 voters as of 3 p.m. Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner said election night ran smoothly and they were able to keep all polling places open with a limited number of election judges. "All elections are different, but primaries are sometimes more difficult because some voters are nervous about declaring their ballot," Tanner said. "The coronavirus outbreak was just another issue on top of that." Tanner said most election judges belong to the older age group, who are most vulnerable if they contract the virus or other illnesses. "We had over 70 judges drop out, but we were able to get everything done." There were 3,938 early ballots cast, and staff will continue to process mail-in ballots over the course of the next 2 weeks, Tanner said. This was up from last year's early voting turnout of 3,012 ballots, which included absentee votes. Anne Frank of Decatur was among those determined to exercise her rights at the ballot box. Frank said she's taking necessary precautions to protect herself from the virus, but since she's working from home now, going out and voting was easy to fit into her schedule. "I do wish that Illinois would have postponed it like other states have done, because I don't think that there's going to be a big turnout," said Frank, 55. "This is important." Ohio and other states delayed in-person voting until June amid the COVID-19 outbreak. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker said he was committed to having the election. Still, election judges in Cook County urged poll workers to use blue painter's tape to mark the floor every 6 feet so voters could keep their distance while waiting in line. There were issues at the polls as well in Chicago, where election officials had worried about a shortage of election judges and had to scramble for replacements for more than 200 polling places that had declined to host voters because of the COVID-19 pandemic. At Moquegua City Hall, election judges worked in pairs to provide ballots to voters in their cars. According to election judge Jill Jordan, the turnout at the Shelby County polling station has been slower than past primary elections. But there's a lot of people that voted early at the courthouse, she said. Jordan blamed the choice of candidates rather than the coronavirus for lower than usual turnout. People have come out with masks and stuff like that, she said, indicating that those who wanted to vote would overcome the obstacles to do so. It's the idea of who's running. Doug Precht, a longtime election judge at the Macon County office building, said early voting might have played a role in low turnout on Tuesday. Early voting has taken care of a lot of voters that don't want to come down here on election day, Precht said. There's a convenience of it. They can come here and vote no matter what precinct they're in. Judges at Scoville Zoo, like other polling places, kept hand sanitizer bottles and disinfectant wipes readily available for frequent cleanings. Two judges were even wearing masks and rubber gloves. Among the voters there was 24-year-old Alex Sobotka, who stressed the importance of getting out to vote. A lot of people are making decisions on both parties, so you've got to vote for the ones you believe in, he said. Voting at Central Christian Church was 22-year-old Ethan Meyer, a student at Millikan University, who noticed a lack of voters his age. He said there was no excuse for that, given that universities have extended spring break over concerns about the spread of the virus. I wish I would see more people my age, he said, but I'm glad people come out and vote regardless. And on to page 2. Curran to face Durbin in November, by Sophia Tureen, Associated Press. A former Chicago area sheriff emerged from a crowded Republican field Tuesday in the Illinois primary, advancing to mount a long-shot challenge against Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Mike Curran, who had perhaps the most name recognition of the candidates, said he ran because the political climate had changed and he believed Durbin is vulnerable. Durbin, the number two Democrat in the Senate, was first elected in 1996 and has handily won each election since then. He also has $4.5 million cash on hand. All other Republican candidates combined made up only a fraction of that. Curran, who led in endorsements, was previously a Democrat but switched parties in 2008. Two other candidates had also switched parties. Perennial candidate Robert Marshall, a Burr Ridge doctor, previously ran as a Democrat, including for governor. Peggy Hubbard of Belleville, a former police officer, said she became a Republican after the fatal shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, in part because of how former President Barack Obama handled it. Hubbard sparked a police investigation when she claimed during a candidate forum at a school that she brought a gun to illustrate safety lapses. Hubbard later said she misspoke. And now local news. Decatur police capture elusive suspect, by Garrett Kirsten. An Argenta man was arrested Monday night following a 40-minute foot chase with police officers that involved him jumping into Lake Decatur, court documents say. The chase began after Decatur police arrived to investigate a report of a person repeatedly entering a vacant home along South Country Club Road. The 30-year-old man, who police determined also was wanted in connection with a domestic incident Sunday night, fled from the officer on foot through the parking lot of a nearby apartment complex and jumped into Lake Decatur off of a dock, according to police. The man was found by police in a neighborhood west of the apartment complex. A sworn affidavit said the suspect was found with a box of .22 caliber ammunition. On Sunday, police say they came into contact with the same man after receiving a call from his ex-girlfriend saying he had threatened her and refused to let her out of the car they were in. She could tell he was high on meth, according to a sworn statement by police, and she made numerous attempts to exit the vehicle, but he kept locking the door. She also said he slapped her in the face and threw things at her, police say. The woman stayed on the phone line with dispatch, allowing officers to locate the vehicle, the affidavit said. Police say the man fled into a wooded area as officers attempted to stop the vehicle Sunday in the 3100 block of North 22nd Street. He was booked into Macon County Jail on Monday night on preliminary charges of unlawful restraint, resisting an officer, resisting and obstructing a peace officer, and illegal possession of ammunition without a FOID card. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State Attorney's Office. The man remains in custody in the Macon County Jail on $40,000 bail, requiring him to post $4,000 to be released. Cannabis votes mixed, by Valerie Wells. Macon County voters approved of the sale of recreational cannabis in Decatur Township and Maroa on Tuesday. Warrensburg results were not available yet as of press time. The propositions were non-binding, meaning government bodies for each municipality would need to take action to follow through on the voters' will. In Decatur, the city council has already banned the sale of marijuana in city limits, but advocates had hoped the results of the referendum would push the council to reverse course. Blue Mound, Decatur Township, Maroa, and Warrensburg had cannabis-related propositions on the ballot. Maroa had three questions: whether to allow a cannabis dispensing organization, whether to allow a cannabis grower or cultivation center, and whether to allow a cannabis infuser, processor, or transport organization. Warrensburg had two: whether to allow a cannabis dispensing organization and whether to allow cannabis support organizations such as growers, infusers, transportation, and storage centers. With all 34 precincts reporting, Decatur Township voters approved the non-binding referendum with 3,330 votes, or 62%, voting yes, and 2,038 voting no, according to unofficial results. Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner said turnout was good for the propositions. "There was some confusion with those who live in Decatur, but not in Decatur Township," Tanner said. "They thought they could vote on the Decatur Township referendum, but because they did not live within those limits, they could not do so." The Decatur Township Board of Trustees voted in December to add the non-binding referendum to the primary ballot. In Maroa's cannabis questions, according to unofficial results, with all precincts reporting, voters approved all three propositions. For allowing a cannabis dispensing organization, 232 voted yes, 208 no, a margin of 53% to 47%. On the question of whether to allow a cannabis craft grower or cultivation center, unofficial results were 237 yes, 204 no, a margin of 54% to 46%. And on the question of whether to allow a cannabis infuser, processor, or transport organizations, the unofficial results were 224 yes, 215 no, a margin of 51% to 49%. Tanner said the turnout for the Maroa Forsyth questions was high, though specific numbers were not immediately available. Blue Mound voters rejected the proposal to allow the sale of recreational cannabis with 92 no votes and 72 yes votes. Maroa Forsyth School District voters appeared poised to approve a referendum to issue a $33 million bond to build a new middle school attached to the high school in Maroa and demolish the existing building. The school district includes residents of both Macon and DeWitt counties. In Macon County, 64% of voters, or 621, voted in favor, with 5 of 8 precincts reporting as of press time. In DeWitt County, 21 people counted yes, while 12 voted no. Both counties' results were unofficial as of press time. Warrensburg election results, including the results of a question about increasing the tax levy for police protection, were not available as of press time. Doty wins circuit clerk race, by Danette Beckett. Sherry Doty, a longtime employee of the Macon County Circuit Clerk's Office, moved one step closer to the ultimate promotion. Doty defeated Jennifer Ybora on Tuesday to represent the Republican Party on the November ballot. Barring a late addition by the Democratic Party, Doty will replace Lois Durbin, who decided not to seek re-election. A Mount Zion resident, Doty has worked for the Circuit Clerk's Office for more than 30 years, supervising all departments of the office. There were also contested races for two Macon County Board seats. In District 5, Republicans Jeffrey Entler and incumbent Deborah Kraft claimed the two available spots on the November ballot. Candidate Hubert Murray finished third. Democrat Jennifer McMillan was uncontested in the primary. In District 7, incumbent Kevin Greenfield defeated challenger Edward Yoder. There currently is no Democratic candidate on the November ballot. Macon County Clerk Josh Tanner said there was high turnout in Mount Zion and Long Creek. This could have been related to the county board races, he said, but those two areas had a good turnout. Ruder Tibbs too close to call. Winner will face Wagner in race for state's attorney, by Tony Reed. Voters were trending towards giving public defender Scott Ruder a chance to go back to the future Tuesday with a solid lead in the Republican primary election for the next Macon County state's attorney. Ruder, who previously held the county's top legal post from 2000 to 2004, was ahead of GOP challenger Philip Tibbs by a 10% margin, with 75% of precincts reporting around 9:30 p.m. The winner will face Democrat Tamara Tammy Wagner in the November election. Wagner, currently a Piatt County assistant state's attorney, did not have a primary challenger. Democrat Jay Scott, the present Macon County state's attorney, will retire with the close of his second term in office. Reuter, who was out collecting campaign signs when reached by phone, said he was confident but not overconfident of the primary result. "I've been in enough of these horse races to know we have to wait and see," he said. In primary election campaign that was ultimately shaped, like everything else, by the grip of coronavirus fears, Reuter said he had still connected with voters, even if it was at arm's length. "Shaking hands has definitely been an area where I've gotten some folks who are like, nah, I don't want to do that, and I can understand it," Reuter said. Tibbs had previously told the Herald and Review he had enjoyed a real good reception on the doorsteps of Macon County and was still feeling okay, waiting for results from some key areas like Mount Zion to come in. "A couple of districts I expect to do well and haven't come in yet, so it's on a wait-and-see basis," said Tibbs, a former assistant state's attorney and now a partner in the Geisler Law Office. Chautauqua renovation gets support. Out of Shelbyville. A majority of Shelbyville voters in Tuesday's election gave their support to the city repairing and preserving the Chautauqua building in Forest Park instead of demolishing this aging historic structure. Unofficial results show that 529 votes, 59.37% of the total cast, answered yes in favor of repair and preservation in this non-binding advisory question. There were 362 no votes. City Council member and Park Commissioner Mark Shanks has said the 20-sided Chautauqua Auditorium, which was built in 1903 to hold large gatherings, is now at risk due to water infiltration, damaging three roof truss and column joints. The ballot question asked if the city should repair and preserve the Chautauqua building so that it is safe for use and occupancy at a projected repair cost of $750,000 to $800,000, with no projected tax increase unless approved by a state referendum, instead of demolishing and removing this structure at a projected cost of $60,000 to $100,000. Shanks has said the city will still have to come up with the money for the repair project. Londrigan-Davis rematch set. Miller-Weaver win primaries for 15th Congressional District by Annalisa Trofimik. The 2020 matchup for the 13th Congressional District will be a repeat of 2018, as Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan claimed victory over opponent Stephanie Smith in the Democratic primary on Tuesday. Londrigan will face four-term U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican Taylorville, in November. With 54 of 72 precincts reporting, Dirksen-Londrigan had 77% of votes, while Smith registered 22%, according to the unofficial Macon County Clerk's Office. Davis was unopposed in the Republican primary. "We've got work to be done here in central Illinois," Londrigan said. "As I travel the district, I hear concerns from people in every corner about health care and the cost of prescription drugs, and Davis continues to vote against people in the 13th district." Londrigan won a crowded five-way primary in 2018, but Davis in the November election that year defeated her by 2,058 ballots. He won 50.4% of the vote, while she carried 49.6%. Londrigan said she had unfinished business in announcing her new bid for the House. Her focus in this year's election is on health care and stopping tax cuts for corporations and wealthy people. Londrigan's team previously told the Herald and Review that her top priorities include affordable health care, strengthening Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and working to create good-paying union jobs through investments in safer, cleaner, and new infrastructure, and fight for increased funding for programs that help our farmers combat the effects of climate change, like the recent flooding which hit central Illinois. "I'm in this race to make sure people have access to quality, affordable health care." Stephanie Smith said her team would release a statement at the later time. Davis's team did not respond to requests for comment. The 13th District encompasses 14 counties, stretching from Bloomington to Champaign to Decatur to the Mississippi River. Boundaries have changed many times, but it has been held by a GOP member since 1895. "My mission is to flip this seat and represent people across the 13th District," Londrigan said. In the 15th Congressional District, held by retiring U.S. Representative John Shimkus, Republican Collinsville, the GOP contest was won by Mary Miller, and Erica Weaver won the Democratic primary. Eight candidates, four from each party, ran in the Republican-leaning territory that runs along a stretch of the Indiana border. Miller emerged with 59% of the vote, with 64% of the precincts reporting. Weaver beat her competitors with 51% of the vote, with 64% of the precincts reporting. The general election is November 3rd. We'll take a short break here and return for the second half of our reading.